Stay informed and up to date. It's the Daily Maverick Show, Tuesdays 1 to 2 p.m. on cliffcentral.com.
Good afternoon. You're live on the Daily Maverick Show on cliffcentral.com. Just after 1 p.m., just about to dig in. Got some of my favorite people in studio, Greg Nicholson, Richard Poblak, Ranjeni Munasami. I just said Richard Poblak. I'm sorry, man.
No, it's your show, man.
So I just get to say whatever I want with no corrections. Yeah. Yeah. So the big question is, what did you guys do for the president's birthday last week? Anything awesome?
I jumped out of a cake.
Okay.
That was a huge surprise.
Okay.
To myself.
So covered in whipped cream, like
I'm just like, you know, it's Jay-Z's birthday. Let's do this.
Okay.
Do it properly. 74, big number.
If you're following us, you can tweet us. Remember @DMShowsAD. We love hearing from you. I saw Ranjeni calling somebody home slice just now. I'm not sure that was
me.
It was
Durban lingo.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, that's pretty. You know, we don't really come from the same neck of the woods, but you know, we can imagine it.
Yeah, exactly.
Now to jump into what we actually want to talk about, Richard Poblak, I'd love to start with you, man. You were actually in PE for the launch of the ANC manifesto, and I'd love to hear, you know, how it was, just the whole atmosphere. How did the launch go? How was it received? The whole shebang.
Well, it was a really weird weekend. I mean, there was such a strange vibe in the city, in the sense that you know, for such a big political event like this one, you would have expected the ANC people who you encountered to be much more jacked up and much more kind of into it. They weren't. It was all sort of. I don't want to say doom and gloom, but there certainly wasn't the usual kind of intense party vibe that you get at one of these things. And then there was of course all of the stuff that I saw, but apparently I didn't see. So what I mean by this is all of the dispute about how many people were in the stadium when Jacob Zuma, when the president walked in with his contingent. I took a picture that sort of from the far end of the stadium that depicted the presidential detail walking by what was largely an empty block of seats, probably 10,000 seats that hadn't been occupied yet. And that was sort of telling in the sense that although the stadium sort of it never got to capacity at any point. We were promised 110,000 people, then 100,000 people, and then, you know, I would argue maybe 32 or 33,000 people were in the stadium at any given point. So there was that sort of dispute that was going on, and that sort of spoke to the fact that there was no excitement in the area, and that was clear. Why that's a political story is because it's clear that the branches just couldn't be motivated to get people on the buses and get people out there. And that was sort of what we were hearing. Organizationally, usually the ANC, I think Ranjeni will back me, usually they're very, very good with this kind of thing. There didn't seem to be the impetus this time around. A lot of what people were saying to me was that people were just demoralized.
You know, it was quite funny watching ANC Twitter, which is... These psychophants, and also it's a whole group of people who defend anything. So there's Jimmy Mani, there's some of the ANC spokespeople in government, and they were saying, no, it's people moving away from the sun.
So they're
migrating away, you know, so that's why it looks like it's empty. But in order to move out of the sun, you had to move to empty seats in the shade.
No, I think you actually had to move to Botswana. I mean, it was so hot. I don't know where you had. There wasn't like any shade anywhere.
But okay, so.
Like north of the Kavango River, I think that's where you had to move to.
But the thing is that. I think it was a bill that the president would speak around 11, and it just kept being pushed later and later because they thought the buses would arrive. And there were these announcements from Baleka Mbete saying that they're on the way, they're coming, taxis have gone to go and fetch, you know, people from this place and that place, and they just never arrived. And what was fascinating for me was watching the faces of the ANC officials on stage because they looked distraught. They were so glum. You know, there wasn't that like festival atmosphere that you normally get at ANC rallies. And you know, they know how to put these things on. But you know, the whole thing, I don't know why there was this pall over the event. Because even the national anthem sounded so crap. I mean, I don't know who they got to sing it. I mean, that's one thing you do. You start off with the national
anthem. It feels great,
yeah. Yeah, you know, it's a rousing rendition of the anthem and everyone feels good and you go from there. But, you know, once that went to pot and then there were all these prayers, did you listen to the content of the prayers?
As I'm saying this sentence,
I'm thinking, I'm asking Richard Palmer. Yeah,
I was standing in the sun having my brain melted. Yeah,
well,
no, I did.
The one guy.
You can't
was
say
saying,
the prayers. The prayers were bad. Really.
The prayers were. No, the prayers were like close to the bone. They were saying things like, "We must forgive each other for these big mistakes we've made." So, like, stop tweeting everyone and, you know, behind these people. Yeah,
who was giving the prayers? The ANC Women's League?
No. They have a whole lot of people from different religious denominations.
No, I was joking. I know.
Yeah. So, you know, it was like, please pray for our sins and, like, save us.
That's so sweet.
It was very strange. And then, of course, you have these like I say, the ANC can put these things on in their sleep. Easy. They really can. Yeah. And in fact, Gwede was sleeping. you know, it was just strange watching these like partially clad dancers shaking their butts in front of these 60-year-old, you know, men and women from the ANC top six. It was just the whole thing was off. And I think that comes from the fact that there's just so much trouble in the Eastern Cape in general and in Nelson Mandela Bay municipality. Mm,
yeah, I think people are assuming this is national, a symptom of the ANC's national stance, but I wonder how much of it is just local politics in Nelson Mandela Bay.
Look, there's also the temptation to say, well, maybe they didn't work hard enough, they didn't mobilize. Mm. I think they worked really hard. And that's why they looked so worried, because they worked hard, but people didn't want to come. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like that movie, you build it and people will come. So they put this thing on thinking people will come as they normally do, which people do. You know, like wherever the ANC goes, people do pitch up in large numbers.
It's
and they just
show.
Didn't.
I think if it was, so some of the excuses that have been used, you know, has been that they didn't pay the buses in advance because in the past, the bus operators have had problems, you know, with the going through the ANC or so if it was just a screw up from the ANC in terms of organizational, pure logistical, I think that's even more worrying, because you'd think that they're under such pressure to have a good turnout for this event. And if they would have put, you know, if they didn't even care, or if they didn't do it right, or if, you know, if they just messed things up, what does that say about like how their ability to actually run something?
But they were preparing for 110,000 people to arrive. Mm. So, you know, out of that number, how many can have transport problems? You know, people, if they want to come, they'll make their way there.
Of course. Yeah. And again, this was the weird thing about the whole setup. Where were they going to put 110,000 people?
In the overflow. The ANC always has an overflow area in whichever stadium, because they prepare.
So they put tents outside and...
No, they have like an open field. Okay. Or I think there it was the aquarium or something, but they have big screens.
Makes perfect sense.
Okay. Yeah.
I think it was in the Daily Dispatch or one of the newspapers. There was an explanation from one ANC official in Eastern Cape talking about how and why they didn't come, and said there's a problem where these guys just, you know, you get on a bus, you come down to PE, then you just end up spending your time at a beach.
Mm-hmm.
And the end
I love
that
idea.
The end of that was that they then had mini launches at the beach for the people who went to the beach. And that was amazing. So maybe we were just looking at the wrong launch.
Mm. That's right.
Yeah, they should have hit there the beach. Yeah.
I mean, so my great question on this has just been, is it just the risk or the decision to hold this in Nelson Mandela Bay? Is this just a symptom of a bad call?
Well, what they wanted to do, I think, is that, you know, shock PE, the shock and awe treatment. So you parade out all the top six officials, the NEC, you know, you paint the townships green and gold, and, you know, people will get sort of enamored with that ANC brand and fall in love with the ANC again. Mm. You must know that's the home ground of the ANC. So, you know, surely people will see that and remember the romance of the ANC and just want to, you know, not only arrive at the rally but also vote ANC, and that was the big plan. But the problem was that during the week, when they were going out, they were not getting the turnouts they expected. And then you had some area where people were really angry and demonstrating. And then you had the incident with the president of the ANC Women's League, where she got chased away and then burst into tears. And then there were some allegations made about her not being fully sober at that point. And then, you know, the big demonstration was then the, you know, the turnout at the at the actual rally. So, you know, there were symptoms throughout the week. But as I say, I think that they did try really hard.
Okay.
But if they, if the idea was to bring out these big personalities in the ANC and use them as the draw card, therein lies the problem. Because you go back to who are those people in the NEC? Who knows David Mashlobo in the Eastern Cape? They've never heard of him before. They would know Malusi Gigaba because he's been around. He's been the president of the ANC Youth League and things. So they would know him. Who is Colin Maine? I mean, who knew him before he became elected ANC Youth League president? So it's all these people, and you expect people to run out of their homes and go, yay, yay, you know, like Kanye West has arrived. And they don't know those people. Who's going to like rock up to see them?
One thing I'm interested in, Richard, is what was the feeling on the ground like about the DA in the area? Obviously, the DA is pushing very, very hard to win Nelson Mandela Bay under Athol Trollip.
Yeah, I actually sat down with Athol Trollip. And again, you know, I think there's a... I think, you know, speaking to him, he there's this, this sort of strange disconnect that I think occurs within the DA, and it happens all the time. I said to him, what about the perceptions of a white male running for mayor in this town, in this traditional ANC stronghold? What are the optics there? There's a dozen ways you could have sliced this. Why you? And he looked at me like I'm insane and said, what optics? What difference does it make? We have no quotas in the ANC. We don't worry about that. What's race got to do with it? The ANC are the people who do who race bait and deal with all of that stuff. Not us. We have nothing to do with it. It's all in someone's imagination. So once again, you have this disconnect between the DA upper structures and the rest of the planet, I suppose, in what would be a decent candidate to run in the ANC's heart. Okay, literally what you're doing is you're crawling in to the heart of this organization and planning to detonate it from the inside of it. Okay, now that's a fairly intricate operation, which the DA are doing with bulldozers, you know, and I just don't know if it's going to play out for them. I think their natural cap anywhere, but in particular in a place like the Eastern Cape or Nelson Mandela Bay would be in the mid-40s. Now, what happens with, members of COPE, if there are any left, and the EFF, UDM. UDM, the EFF, they could cobble together a coalition that goes a little higher than 50%. But one thing Trollope does know, he's a very seasoned politician, and he understands the both the benefits of coalition politics. Obviously, the DA came into the Western Cape on the back of a very shaky coalition, but obviously we're able to build on that and build on that and build on that. But they are very dangerous coalitions. Now, what a coalition in Nelson Mandela Bay would look like, where you literally have to go councillor to councillor and start getting people out of the jail, because the patronage network is so tight there, and the rot goes so deep and has been there for so long. Not only do they need to get into as high a vote as they possibly can, then likely put a coalition together, then they have to start governing, and that's when the real danger starts, if you ask me. So I don't think they're in a particularly amazing position there, to be honest.
Anything in the manifesto that should worry them? We actually haven't talked about the actual manifesto that was launched. Like, no one's talking about the actual manifesto.
The manifesto is an absolute joke. The manifesto is probably the most dispiriting element of this whole discussion. I mean, when the embargo was lifted and Jay-Z was droning on, reading out, I guess, the bullet points of the manifesto, this thing landed on our laps. And it's, again, a wishy-washy version of good story to tell. There's no actual. I mean, you've looked at this thing. I'm sure you would agree with me. There's just nothing in there that you can hold on to. It's like going to a blockbuster movie and walking out of it, and you don't know who the superhero was that you just saw. You don't remember any of the plot. All you remember is like some vague coloration and some noise. That's all.
Well, I think it was a lot of it was a repetition of what was in the January 8th statement and the State of the Nation address. So it's a lot of recycled stuff. There were some parts where you wanted to just laugh out loud.
But like, it makes sense that it's consistent with the State of the Nation address.
It does, but you're talking about local government here. So, you know, there's complete focus here on local government. Okay. And I mean, the way the president started off was, you know, is talking up the constitution, and I don't know how that 33,000 people just didn't fall about laughing in the stadium when he did that.
They were moving to the shade. They were moving.
They were moving.
Remember, it was hot. Yeah. The brains were baked.
Yeah. So I mean, somebody obviously thought it was a great idea for the president to stand up in front of the nation and talk up the constitution, and you know that will patch over everything and it'll make him look good. It's a good message. Except that, you know, you have an emperor there with no clothes. And, you know, then turning around and mooning you with no clothes, you know, that's the image you get because, you know, after violating the constitution, then not apologizing for violating the constitution, but apologizing for confusion about Nkanta. So that whole thing is hanging. And then there's actually no accountability for that violation of the constitution. Then you say, I violated the constitution, but still, yay, we uphold the constitution. Then the second
thing. Love the constitution. Love it.
Yeah. The second big irony then was performance agreements for councillors.
For the councillors, yeah.
But there are performance agreements for ministers. Have you anybody ever seen it or seen anybody held to account for their performance? They've got a whole department of monitoring and evaluation that is supposed to do precisely that. What is it doing? So how do you think that it's going to suddenly translate in local councils that's so far removed from the top, you know, and you expect to just impose this this policy and think it's going to work magic on the ground and it'll suddenly satisfy every dissatisfied community around the country.
Sorry, just hopping back to that point about the constitution. There's times when I really do feel like my sanity is just going to shred in this job, and that was one of them. When I'm standing in the stadium watching this guy talk about the constitution. There was another moment that sort of was cued for me from back in the 2014 national elections, where I was on a road. I was on a road show, I guess, with President Zuma and his contingent, and we were walking through a very, very maligned township in Sasselburg. And he stops off at this house. This young family had clearly been doing some renovations to this house. Now, keep in mind, this is right after Tuli Madonsela's Secure and Comfort report dropped. We're probably 3 weeks into the scandal. And he says to these people, tell me about your renovations. And everyone kind of looks at each other stops and looks. And he's looking at this young man. And the young man and me lock eyes. And he looks at me, he's like, is this shit actually happening?
I know. Yeah, I mean,
are we together? He looked at me like with a mixture of terror and just like, it's like he could see his soul just separate and go up into the vaporous air. And this is another one of these things. You know, when I say the DA is completely disconnected from reality, you can see where they get it from. There is real disconnect in this country between our politicians and what is actually happening in the known universe.
Correct. No, I think on the manifesto, so the ANC's sort of slogan for these elections is advancing people's power. Mm-hmm. And I'm still not sure exactly what that means, you know. Ranjini talked about how this idea of holding councillors accountable, and Zuma mentioned that.
That seems to be the centre of it.
But also, I think one of the other things and that Zuma mentioned in his January 8th statement that he repeated here is about how trying to make the process of electing candidate councillors democratic, whereas in the past some communities were angry where lists were imposed, councillors were imposed on them. So trying to sort of stop those problems by ensuring that they're elected by the branch leaders. But that he's mentioned that before, and I don't think people are going to have such. I think some members might have faith in that, but it's not a big selling point.
This is also being said in the context of a municipality in which a celebrity candidate
that's right
was parachuted into the mayoral
that's exactly right
position. So then you know it's like are you for real? I mean, no.
And then the other big message supposedly in the manifesto is the anti-corruption message. So you know, with all of this, it's somebody who's so highly compromised, who's presenting these messages, and the ANC still expects to sell these messages and get people to vote on the basis of it.
And then I think with like the bread and basic sort of issues of, you know, so services, growing the economy, employment, and how municipalities can do that better. I don't think there are any real... There was nothing new and nothing emphasized even. So obviously, I think, like you said, the ANC does have to stick on a sort of stable trajectory according to its policy, but it didn't highlight anything different. It didn't emphasize anything new. And I think at least in sort of as a campaigning tool, it has to like highlight some things as to what it's going to do. And it doesn't have any options or ideas.
You know, there's a really, really interesting and very important piece in the Daily Maverick today written by Marianne Merton that sums up a whole bunch of... a whole bunch of data recently released by Stats South Africa with regard to youth development in this country. And the notion, at least according to the numbers, that there has been no change since apartheid. In fact, there's been a decline in terms of youth employment, youth opportunities, youth education, and all of the stuff. So once again, when the ANC is going around, especially a municipality like Nelson Mandela Bay, where youth unemployment is something staggering like 42%, maybe even a bit higher, you know, and then there's all these numbers that are kind of dumped on our lap on a Tuesday morning that back up what people are saying in these municipalities. Nothing's changed. We're desperate. There's no work. There's no development. Help us. And you get an election manifesto which says everything's cool, but we've got to make a couple of tweaks here and there. You know, I don't know who's going to be buying this. And
tell me if I'm wrong, but didn't that report say that, in fact, it's either so progress and opportunities have either stagnated or regressed for black youth, whereas other races have got more opportunities now.
Yes, 100%. Which is this was specific shocking to African youth. And I would say that in the context of the Western Cape, the Eastern Cape, especially Nelson Mandela Bay, the coloured community has been completely forgotten, absolutely forgotten. So, you know, it's a community in real, real trouble. One of the things I try to emphasize in my piece is how nothing has optically changed in Port Elizabeth since I remember from being a kid during the apartheid years. I drove in there, I almost fainted. I mean, it was unbelievable. Nothing has changed. The town is set up for rich white people and rich black people to enjoy a very, very nice lifestyle. And they are a very, very small slice of the population in that town. The rest of the people are not doing well.
Okay, that's really sort of sobering listening in terms of the manifesto.
You know, that's the irony of the ANC presenting this manifesto as if it's coming out with this whole new big plan for local government, local government, and it isn't. It's been there, and you know, the other thing that I think would be a signal of the poor performance of municipalities is in consecutive Auditor General reports. Which shows a rollover of budgets, you know, the misspending, the abuse of funds. And, you know, most municipalities in the country are controlled by the ANC. And where's this good story to tell? In that manifesto, it should have said, this is was the situation with municipality X. This was how much was underspent. This is how much abuse of funds there were. This was how much under-delivery. In this period of time, this is how we've been able to change it. With the new councillors that we've deployed in the last election, and use that comparative studies to show how people's lives have improved, how the rate of delivery has improved. That's how you tell a good story, you know. You don't just come and recycle old stuff and present it as being new and expect people, you know, to just swallow it and not question it.
100%.
Imagine hearing from the people themselves who've been a benefit, you know, benefited from those services, and having a regular person come up and say, you know what?
Well,
10 years ago, XYZ was like this, and now, you know, it's not. It's different. It's better.
The problem is that when people do try and tell the ANC, like the community that was trying to tell the ANC Women's League president, her response was
that, in passing,
that she would have beaten them up if she didn't face the risk of being disciplined. That was her comment.
Sorry, when did this happen? What happened?
You know, the day when they refused for her to speak.
Yes,
right. So when she was
head of the ANC Women's League down in PE.
Yes. So she went to this community to campaign.
Yeah.
They shouted her down. They refused for to let her speak. She burst into tears. They then point out that she's crying because she's drunk. And that was the allegation. And then, like, the ANC officials, they are trying to do damage control. Thereafter, the later the afternoon, journalists then interview her to say, like, what happened? And her response was, if I didn't face the prospect of being disciplined by the ANC, I would have beaten those people up.
It's like a Trump rally.
I'm just trying to imagine what happens if she takes all those people and they sit down in a field or in a hall and just talk for a bit. And I know this sounds so airy-fairy and sounds so, you know, peace, love, and happiness. But what happens there if we just talk for a bit and hear what are the actual issues aside from them accusing her of being drunk?
No, but I think the people in Nelson Mandela Bay municipality have been speaking for a long while.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing secretive. You know, Jesse Duarte, when you speak to her, it's always about a media agenda or an internet agenda.
Yes.
The internet is out to get Jesse Duarte and the rest of the top six in the ANC in general, the internet. But there's no secret to what is troubling municipalities like Nelson Mandela Bay. No one's been hiding. It's not like, oh, we've just been, you know, you sort of take a fake house away from your shack and then it's like, oh, no, look, we're living in shacks. You know, no one's hiding anything. Mm. All of these are long established issues and they have to change.
Jesse Duarte fascinates me, I must say. In every interview I saw her doing in the run-up to the rally, she was saying, Nkandla is not an issue. People don't want to talk to us about it. They're not asking questions about it. And that shows the perspective of the ANC officials. Because nobody's going to come and say, why did you build a swimming pool? What you're dealing there is a perception of a ANC leadership that is disconnected, that can see a project like that go, see state funds misspent in the way it was, then deny accountability for it, and then rubbish the constitution to cover up for it, and then come out here and say, oh, what can we do for you? You know, so this is the approach to it. They don't realize that there's been people have been insulted for several years on issues like Nkandla, and now they want to go out to people and say, you know, we're coming at you because we care about you.
Mm.
You know, we want to give you what you want.
Mm.
And I don't know how they cannot see the problem with doing that and still believe that issues like Nkandla is not a problem for the broad South African community.
It's bizarre. And I mean, that really is where Jesse Duarte lives. She lives in that gap between, you know, sort of reality and perception. It's astonishing. I mean, and I'm not entirely sure she's a big fan of you, Ranjani.
I don't think many people in the ANC are big fans.
She's like, when I try to speak, she's like, no, we don't. Daily Maverick's not a good place for us to speak these days. And well, I could see her sort of conjuring you up in her eyes.
Well, yeah. I think the pit, of places that are where the ANC feels comfortable to speak, it's so narrow now.
Mm.
It's like one quarter of the SABC and the New Age. That's basically where they feel comfortable. Because I mean, they're not stupid people at the SABC. They're some really good journalists there, you know, who ask hard, penetrating questions. Mm. It's just that, you know, that they don't get the requisite screen time, and when they do, it irritates the ANC, like what Faith Mutambi did. One journalist asked her pressing questions when she was out there, and she got that show canned, and the reporter has been suspended. So, you know, there is a very real problem in terms of how the ANC relates to the media, because they believe that the media is behind their downfall and refuse to do any kind of introspection to see what they themselves have done to contribute to that.
Is any quick question before we play a quick commercial? Perhaps what Jesse Duarte is trying to say is that the Nkandla issue perhaps is largely a Gauteng affecting thing, and in terms of how it's affected people's perceptions of the ANC. And I don't completely disagree with this, that a lot of this is happening on social media, a lot of it is happening in really big cities, a lot of it in Gauteng, and that local elections is a lot about much more local issues. Would you agree with that?
I don't think that there is generally more hype around the national scandals in areas like Gauteng, yeah, where there's more of a media presence.
We care about things like the constitution.
Yes. Yeah. Right? So in Gauteng,
in rural areas,
I'm not saying they don't care, but it just does it affect me? No, you know, having water and electricity.
My sense is this: the Nkandla issue is a very, very emotive issue. It's very emotive. It's about housing. It's about where a guy has misspent taxpayers' money, the people's money, on a big house when so few people have, where the land issue really hasn't been addressed. So I think it's a really, really emotive issue, and I think we're sort of kidding ourselves. The issue is, where else do people turn?
No, but I didn't quite finish what I was saying. That yes, it is an issue in urban areas because there's more of a media saturation. Yeah. But there is a general awareness throughout the country. Okay. Nobody in this country doesn't know about Nkandla. Everybody is aware of it. Everybody is aware of the abuse around it. Mm. It's the ANC is reliant on rural South Africans being able to forgive the ANC because they have other priorities. That's how they rationalize it. And they also have this enduring belief that people in rural areas would be more likely to believe that President Zuma was entitled to that amount of money being spent on his home. They're trying to rely on some kind of traditional belief that the king deserves more than his people.
Okay.
And I think that's what gives them that kind of arrogance to be able to say that nobody else cares about it.
Okay, I'm going to play this quickly. We'll be right back.
When it comes to foreign investment, what is and what isn't allowed? What happens to your overseas money when you die? With the changes regarding overseas funds and how SARS treats you if you're a South African taxpayer, St. James Global has the answers for you. They've been doing this for years and focus on preserving and protecting offshore wealth, as well as creating succession planning structures. Make sure your worldwide assets pass on into the future. Go to stjamesglobal.com for more information. That's stjamesglobal.com. Your independent wealth managers.
St. James Global is an authorized financial services provider.
Stay informed and up to date. It's the Daily Maverick Show, Tuesdays 1 to 2 p.m. on cliffcentral.com. Stay informed and up to date. It's the Daily Maverick Show, Tuesdays 1 to 2 p.m. on cliffcentral.com.
You're back with us on the Daily Maverick Show on Cliff Central. Just going into the karaoke portion of the show. Pop, like, you got something for us, man?
No, you see, now this is absolutely uncalled for. Okay. I was singing Alanis Morissette's Isn't It Ironic?
Yeah.
Just a few minutes ago, but I'm not going to
bust it out. With the wrong words.
Yeah, the words were wrong. But, Ranjini pointed out that it would be a great song to play because isn't it ironic that the president just stood up in front of 32,000 people and spoke about the importance of the Constitution.
They should have mixed it. Like, you say a sentence and then they play a verse of or a line from the song. And then he says some more and then they play another line from the song.
Hey, YouTubers, get to it.
Yeah, like how none of us are even going to attempt. Well, like somebody should totally do that. Yeah,
a million views.
Just like that.
Yeah.
Now you're making me think of the Women's League versus the churches now. I was gonna not talk about this, but I just love the idea that you have to forgive the president because the Lord's Prayer says.
And Ranjini goes to church. So Ranjini, was this the correct interpretation of the Bible? The Women's League saying that we must forgive the president.
As it says in verse blah, blah.
It says clearly, and forgive us our trespasses as we forgive those who trespass against us.
Yeah.
I love how that's like the only prayer. Isn't that from the Our Father?
That's from the Our Father.
And they just quote the most commonly known prayer.
Which makes sense.
Prayer.
That is
go for the number one.
So if you go to
the
church.
The very next line in the Our Father, and lead us not into temptation.
Oh boy. Okay, so that fell apart pretty quickly. I was just about to say, if you go to church, you have to forgive the president, and that's it. So
president should not lead himself into temptation,
That fell apart.
And neither should the Guptas be tempted.
Oh, boy.
Deliver us from evil.
Yes.
So I'm glad that we're talking president and talking national now. Ranjini, you've written some interesting articles about sort of the state, the internal state of the ANC and sort of factions brewing and who's who's on which side and where people are sitting now. And I just love to get a sort of temperature check from you post the Concord ruling and post the apology, non-apology about where things are sitting now inside the ANC.
Okay, so the thing that I think shook things up was the ANC Gauteng statement last week that was basically against the grain of where the national leadership was pushing the matter of the outcome of the Constitutional Court case. So they, the ANC in Gauteng is saying the president should do the right thing and act in the interests of the ANC to rescue it from the crisis it is in. So before the ANC in Gauteng did this, there were several provinces that already came out in support of the president. So that was KwaZulu-Natal, Mpumalanga, Free State, Northwest. And that is loosely the... The Eastern Cape, but that is loosely the what is known as the Premier League faction in the ANC, and we know that they're solidly behind President Zuma, and that they also backed by the ANC Youth League and the ANC Women's League. So we know that this is now what is shaping up to be the faction backing Zuma and backing whichever candidate they feel should succeed him will continue. You know, they can or keep their network in power. So that's a network of business and political people who run the state and have influence over how what the country does. So they basically, after the National Working Committee of the ANC pronounced on the matter, these guys then like came out in full force behind the president. The matter was meant to rest there, but it's not. We've seen that there have been some branches in Johannesburg that have come out that say no, that the president should be recalled. Now you've got ANC Gauteng saying the president should do the right thing, but they're not also leaving it there. They're saying they're going to go back to structures, they're going to consult to structures, and then they're going to come back with a consolidated position, which may or may not involve him being recalled or a special conference called, which can then... remove him as ANC president, or they're also saying that they may refer him to the Integrity Commission. So they've got lots of options on the table. But immediately, Gwede Mantashe is trying to shut it down. You saw that he was saying that they have no authority to speak on these issues. Funnily enough, he didn't say this when all the other provinces were speaking.
So they had authority to speak.
Yeah, so I mean, I was talking to some people in the ANC in Gauteng, and they say, you know, that they are not really happy about that, that, you know, they got shut down immediately. But everybody else has leverage, you know, to campaign to shut the matter down. So I think that what the ANC is trying to do is saying we need to shut this down completely and just focus on the election message. We'll get back to it. So I think that's where the story that was in the Sunday Times, the lead story in the Sunday Times, that says that there is some discussion of something happening after the local government elections. So then there is a plan then to remove the president. But, you know, you cannot help but be suspicious of that, that that is just a stalling mechanism. And the ANC loves stalling mechanisms, by the way. They love to bury everything and say, we are looking at it, we are investigating this, we asked so-and-so to investigate the Integrity Commission, that this, that, that. That's how they deal with every single crisis.
So you think that that could be a ploy to say, look, we're taking this seriously, and there is a chance that the president will be removed, but just hold on, everybody. Let's just get through these time. Votes
let's
first.
Get through elections,
they are not going to recall the guy. I mean, you heard that here on the Daily Maverick Show. It's not going to happen. You know, and you can stake us on that. The whole show.
All right, that's done.
Right. Well,
you know what? Let's just go. Let's do it. Whatever. Yeah, no, I'm kidding.
Well, you see, the thing is that for example, the former MK commanders and combatants issued a statement. They were calling for a special conference because only that special conference has the power to remove him as ANC president. For as long as he remains ANC president, he remains present in every single meeting. So can you imagine this, that NEC meets, NWC meets, national officials meets, there is the person sitting in the chair whom you're supposed to discuss and discuss removing. How does that happen? It's the ultimate awkward moment. You know, you cannot have a frank discussion saying this guy is like screwing us up.
He's out of control.
You can't do it. He's sitting there. So, you know, just the logistics of it is, or the, you know, the it can't happen. And that was what was the problem with the last NEC meeting on the Gupta issue as well, because President Zuma was sitting there defending his friends. And so you had to be really brave to stand there and say, but you're lying, Mr. President. And not many people in the ANC field feel able to do or empowered to do that.
Sorry, I was going to say, what do you think? So the ANC, the Gauteng ANC PEC, say after consulting their branches, they're going to go to the next NWC meeting ahead of the NEC meeting that could, if it wanted to, take action on Zuma. So if we imagine Paul Mashatile speaking to the NWC, the top six and other officials of the top, you know, of the ANC, do you think that when, if they present this case, that we want action taken against the president, either to refer him to the integrity committee or to suggest that he's recalled or any sort of other action, that the balance of forces on the NWC would take him seriously, or and could even is there any chance of them siding with Gauteng and saying, oh, okay, like we'll take what you're saying seriously and maybe take this to the NEC, or is it just going to be wiped away?
Okay, first and foremost, the Gauteng ANC is not saying that because they're expecting the result out of it. They're saying it so that his constituency knows its position. So when they're out there on the campaign trail and they say, people will be saying, particularly the middle class will be saying, why aren't you speaking up? They say, but we are. We've spoken up. We're here to consult you on this matter.
It's called ask coverage.
So first and foremost, that's the agenda behind it. That's what they're doing. They know that they're fighting a losing battle. They knew that from the if you remember what Paul Mashatile was doing on Nkandla. At every single meeting he went to, he was saying, I think we should pay back the money. Not even, I think you should pay back the money. He was saying, let's do it, guys. Let's comrades. Let's pay the money. Come on, let's do it. He kept saying that. And that is why he's about the only guy in that NEC now who is not covered with,
in the blood of Zuma.
Yeah, okay. Exactly. Okay. You know,
a lot of religious illusions.
Sorry, I could just,
Yeah. So, I mean, they know that even when they take back the decision, whatever it is, to the NEC or NWC, they're going to get, it's going to get be trashed. Nobody's going to want to follow up on it, but it's going to be there on record. That's also going to help the ANC in Gauteng in its campaign towards the next elective conference as it backs its new candidate, because it's going to have to distinguish this current lot from the new guy, whoever that may be.
I mean, it's really encouraging for Gauteng. I'm feeling, just as you're talking about it, it just feels great that somebody spoke up on Kandla, speaking up now. I know you're saying it's covering their asses, but it feels good.
You found that encouraging?
Yes.
Yes, but is it, the question then is, would sufficient people who would still have faith in the ANC in Gauteng be still able to vote for the ANC in Gauteng as a bloc on its own? Or do you have to see them in the context of the ANC monolith?
I still think it's fascinating to see how this is going, obviously the whole issue with the president, but also Gauteng's move here to try and cover their asses, how it's going to affect the local elections coming up this month, where we have Johannesburg, Tswane, that are really up for grabs.
Look, I mean, I don't think they could have done anything less. They needed to do that. But, you know, it's interesting. I don't think David Makura has been that terrible for Gauteng. I think he's been doing a fairly decent job. A lot of people don't like to hear that, but I think he's been doing a fairly decent job, and I think that's the best way forward for the ANC at this point, is to actually deliver.
I think under the current premier, the ANC is reasonably popular in the province in terms of when we compare it to the mother body.
Backsliding, if that's what you're saying, and I agree with that. I'm not sure if the province were up for grabs right now, if the ANC wouldn't claw back a bit,
could very much have a split vote, so people could still vote ANC in Gauteng. That'll only be in 2019 now, unless there's an early election. It's to still vote ANC in Gauteng, and then at national level vote for someone else.
When one throws these numbers out, I think there is a link between, you know, people keep going on about how municipal elections about local issues, local issues. The local issues in this country, in a weird way, are relatively consistent. It comes down to service industry. When you blow that up to a national level, it's service delivery. It's delivery. It's getting stuff back from the government, for output. And I think that's sort of that's where all of these issues sort of coalesce and sort of smash into each other. So I think the perception of what how a region is doing nationally does feed back to how it's going to do in the local elections.
I mean, there's been a lot of questions about the IEC and their readiness and to execute on the local elections. Are you, and Jenny, how are you feeling about that?
Well, you know, the IEC was instructed by the Constitutional Court on the Clocker matter to ensure that those registered have provided their addresses, and I think they're battling on that issue. And there is also a lot of confusion about it now, in terms of those people who are already registered, whether that you need to vest your residential address with them. So I think, you know, they've I don't know how many by-elections they've postponed already, but I think there's a second round that they've already postponed because after this residential address issue. So it is worrying. But also there's the trust factor about the IEC. You know, the IEC, like SARS, used to be like one of the most credible institutions. And although, you know, there were problems on the ground, you know, there were always allegations about people being bussed in areas. Generally, there was faith.
This is what happened.
You know, no matter who the personalities are. Now that is not so much the case, you know, that because there's no single institution that has been left untouched by the Zuma administration. There is a big credibility gap, I think.
And there's a case in point with this, and it gives the opposition an interesting little bit of sneak room or wiggle room. After Gauteng was so narrowly contested in the last elections, remember, Ranjan, we were at the IEC for Julius Malema's concession speech. What he was saying is that he came out and said, no, they lost Gauteng. They lost. What they did was play some games in Alexandra,
and
they won. The IEC is with the president. They lost. So it's interesting. I mean, what we could see much, much more of is exactly those kind of claims, and that sort of starts to dig away at the credibility of the entire process. And that's actually quite dangerous. I mean, if there's voter apathy in the country before the IEC completely detonates, I can only imagine what it'll be like after that.
And I think that there is a real danger of the results of the elections being contested in several areas because of that trust deficit.
Mm-hmm.
And that can be a real problem because, you know, you can have the results being taken to court or reruns.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's very... it is a precarious state now because we don't know how credible this election will be.
It's going to be very interesting to see. I think it's on May 9 is the Constitutional Court's clarification of the IEC judgment. I think that's when it'll be fascinating to really see what they say about these elections going ahead.
Cool, absolutely. We're just going to the last bit, and I'm glad that you brought up the opposition parties. I'd love to hear just, you know, a bit of thoughts on their strategies going into the elections and this sort of game of how to... how much attention to pay on Zuma, how much attention to sort of pay on launching their own manifestos and the EFF, I think it's this week or this weekend. And, you know, I'm just curious what your thoughts are on that.
Well, I had this avalanche of hate from the Democratic Alliance.
After you interviewed.
And its supporters. Oh. Yes, because I said, I asked questions on Twitter about whether their strategy was in rushing into that impeachment vote and forcing the ANC to close ranks. So as a result of that avalanche of hate, I then got to sit down with Musi Maimane to ask him these questions. And, you know, you have to sympathize with the guy because he is stuck at the moment. He has to keep up and undertake processes that he knows he can't win. Okay, so he believes that they needed to make because they a party which projects itself to uphold constitutionality, they had to then go into that impeachment vote.
Okay.
And that's not where the process ends, that they're now working with other opposition parties, you know, to try and look into disciplinary action, to have an ad hoc committee sit to look at the repercussions of the Constitutional Court judgment. So there are the processes underway. But this, I mean, all these opposition parties are at the moment on the campaign trail, which they're hitting hard, but they have this, you know, a huge albatross to still have to deal with, and there are not many options available to them to have to hold President Zuma accountable in parliament. The place where they keep winning is the court. Mm-hmm. So I was asking Musimane, why don't you like keep hammering
keep
there?
Going there.
Yeah, because that's where you win. Yeah. Because you know, the NC uses its majority, shuts you down. Mm. And he said that, you know, they have to exhaust every possible option they have. So even if they keep losing in parliament, that's the parliament is a representation of the people's will. They all put there for a reason. They can't just give up on parliament because they don't have a majority. So, you know, it's a tough place to be in. Julius Malema, on the other hand, is full frontal as usual. He's basically said at the press conference with, on the outcome of the Constitutional Court judgment that they don't recognize the president as president anymore. If he tries to address parliament, they're going to remove him from the podium.
Physically.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. So
I've just got this head of Julius wrestling with about 20 VIP security
and Julius,
guards.
Julius has lost a lot of weight, so I don't know what he thinks he's going to be doing up there with those bouncers.
Maybe he's working out to be able to physically.
That may be it. So
just on the DA's impeachment.
Yeah, you
were at
the march, and you.
Firstly, on the impeachment idea, I think couldn't this impeachment idea, jumping to that, that makes the ANC close ranks around a failing president or a president with very negative perceptions or failing perceptions around the or failing favor around the country, benefit the opposition party? So even if it doesn't benefit the country by because they're effectively prolonging his stay, but they prolong the stay of someone who's very increasingly unpopular.
So they look good.
Yes, but they look to their own constituency. The thing that the opposition needs to do now is break into the ANC's constituency.
Exactly.
That's what they're not doing effectively.
And why rushing the impeachment vote was a bit of a mistake, because parliamentary politics are about negotiation. You actually need time. Swing people.
Jackson Mthembu is in the new chief whip. He's basically saying he wants to promote cooperation with the opposition party. So there was space to maneuver, to actually set up maybe this disciplinary committee or ad hoc committee, had they not rushed into the impeachment vote. That's what I think.
I saw Musimamani last week at the march to the Constitutional Court, and I don't think I've ever seen him with such... so he was saying Futsek Zuma.
Yes.
You know,
he's
Tsotsi number one, Tsotsi number two about the ANC. He's really ramped up the aggression
Well, he's also have to play the game with Julius Malema because, you know, Julius is streets ahead of him when it comes to aggression. So, you
and
know,
headlines,
he,
man. Yeah.
So he can't really like take the namby-pamby approach, you know, and
he is a wonk. I mean, what he would love to do more than anything is just sit down with data and numbers and legal case files and deal with politics in that way. I mean, that's how Musi thinks.
Or he can be like Monsieur Lakota and just decide, I'm not doing this anymore, and like walk out of parliament, withdraw.
I'm so tired, guys.
But like Cope has withdrawn from parliamentary politics, but I don't know what they then do, because they would say they may come back, you know, if there's a disciplinary process, but you don't stage a walkout and then say, okay, but I may come back just now. You need to like define the rules of the terms of your walkout.
I'm sure all three of them are greatly missed.
Yes.
Unfortunately, that's all the time we have. Greg, Ranjani, Richard, thank you so much. Everybody tuning in, please remember to download the podcast, share it far and wide, and we'll see you next week, same time.
The Daily Maverick Show on cliffcentral.com.